The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are live today, and you can call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. If you're not listening live, you can call our 24-hour voicemail, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. And there's a special reason to call. We are doing a giveaway on this show only. We are giving away an amazing wooden butt plug from Knob Essence, the Romp. And the fine folks at Nightcap Megastore in Staten Island, New York, are donating that romp. So if you want a romp, you can either call us now, or you can call and leave a comment or a question about this show topic on our voicemail. Someone's going to win like a $130 beautifully, artisanally crafted romp butt plug. Don't you want it to be you? Our thanks to Jackie at Nightcap Megastore, NITECapMegastore.com. So think that through. And today we are going to talk all about consent with someone whose work revolves around consent and approaches it from many different areas. Kitty Stryker is a writer, activist, and authority on developing a consent culture in alternative communities. Now working on Ask, Building a Consent Culture, an anthology through Thorn Tree Press coming out in 2017, Kitty tours internationally speaking at universities and conferences about feminism, sex work, body positivity, queer politics, and more. An active member of the genderqueer feminist art group, the Degenderettes, she spends much of her time serving as a street medic in support of anti-fascist, anti-racist resistance. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Kitty Stryker.
Thank you. Hello. It's great to be here.
So I want to start and talk a little bit about your experiences in sex work and how for you, well, I like to ask the question, what did you learn about consent in sex work?
That's a really good question. I actually credit a lot of my experience learning about boundaries and consent to my sex work experiences, particularly being an escort. I learned that clear boundaries, the clearer the better for many people. So learning how to articulate what exactly I was and was not willing to do and what exactly I expected in exchange was really important. And I think that the other thing that I learned a lot about that doesn't get talked about very often is nonverbal consent and being able to read body language and tones of voice and not taking that as a 100% marker of someone's consent, but additional data to where they're at. Because sometimes I notice that like a client would say, oh yeah, that's fine, or yeah, I like that, but would be physically moving away. And so being able to recognize that and ask more questions was really, really helpful.
And in general, you have seen your sex work as a positive experience, and also have lots of critiques of capitalism through sex work. I wonder if you'll share some of those with us.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for me, sex work was a really excellent way to survive capitalism when I didn't have higher education or financial stability to protect me. That said, I also think it's really important to acknowledge that women in particular, and more marginalized women especially, really struggle to find stable employment where they are treated with respect. And many of them gravitate towards sex work because of the freedom it allows you in terms of how much money you get paid per hour or per activity, but also the time that you have available to do things like childcare or to pursue an education, which I think people who are anti-sex work ignore the fact that if you don't give women options that give them the ability to provide for their children or to go to school or to pursue their other interests, they are going to keep gravitating towards sex work when that is the thing that's available.
Yeah, yeah. And you've done a bunch of work in feminist porn, which is a world a lot of my listeners are familiar with because I talk about it a lot. And, you know, one of the big things that people continue to talk about in feminist porn is that feminist porn depicts real female pleasure, real female orgasms, real chemistry and connection between partners. And so there's this emphasis in the dialogue that we have about feminist porn about authenticity being so critical. And sort of in response to what people see as these fake performances or fake orgasm or faked pleasure in some kinds of mainstream porn. And so I'm wondering what your take on is, even though this is a little of a sidebar, on authenticity in sex work and especially in porn.
Yeah, well, I kind of want to give a shout out. I wrote a piece about this for BuzzFeed a while back called The Difference Between Porn and Sex. And that was in response, actually, to a Cosmo article, I believe, where they were trying to say that, oh, well, there's porn sex and there's real sex, which also speaks to that authenticity, the idea that all porn sex is performative and all real sex is non-performative. My experience is that all sex is performative, almost ideally. Like, maybe that's just me. I like being performative. I enjoy demonstrating to my partner what I'm enjoying through my sounds and through my physical behavior in a way that if I'm masturbating by myself, I am completely still, like a dead fish. I am silent, and it takes me about 45 minutes, after which I spend about 15 minutes massaging my hand and going, thank God that's over. So, like, that's not fun to watch, and that's not fun to do in front of a partner. So, like, even though that's very authentic, it loses something if you're trying to have an experience with somebody else. So, I don't know. I kind of have weird feelings about the idea of authenticity. I faked orgasms in porn. They looked real because I know how to perform, you know? But that doesn't mean that the sex that I was having was less enjoyable because I made my orgasm come a little bit more soon than it actually physically did.
And what do you think about the notion that, you know, the sign of a good production in feminist porn is that the performers had fun?
You know, my first response was going to be like, well, I think that having fun is really important. At the same time, though, it is a job. And I think that giving a good performance is more important. What would make a porn feminist to me is a good work environment, which I guess isn't as sexy or easy to tell by watching it, but like having a safe and ethical work environment where accountability is respected, that to me is more indicative of a feminist workplace whether it's porn or anything else.
You know, this makes me think of, it just popped into my head, I just watched the very first episode of Harlots, which is an original Hulu series. For people who don't know, you should check it out. And I would love to hear your thoughts about it, because, like, I have my own kind of take on what I think's going on there with Harlots, which is really fascinating. But we're almost at break. Okay, so let's take a break. You're going to take that commercial break to think about your thoughts on Harlots. Have you seen it?
Okay. Yes, I have seen the first four episodes.
Oh, you've seen the first four? How did you get your hands on the first four?
Because I am clever and I'm writing a piece about it for Vice. So,
ooh, you're so smart. Okay, good. I want to get some spoiler alerts. Okay, so we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I swear we're getting to consent, but I need to hear about Harlots first. And I want to remind everyone that the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. So you should visit their boutiques in New York, LA, and Chicago, and enjoy their free weekly workshops offered in their Pleasure Ed program. Experience sex ed in a fun, non-judgmental, and supportive, and by the way, free environment. Whether you're improving your skills, learning the proper way to wield a whip, the Pleasure Ed program has classes for all experience levels, orientations, and interests. And while you're there, students of the class get 15% off their purchase that night. Go to pleasurechest.com for the class schedule. Let me tell you what's coming up. On April 5th in Chicago, Strap-On Sexercise with Anne Marie. In LA, April 5th, Talk Dirty to Me, Role Play and Fantasy in the Bedroom with Victor. April 6th, it's Warm Happy Hour, where you're going to be introduced to one of the newest toys on the market, and there's going to be booze and beverages and fun, and you should definitely check that out. April 9th is Dyke Day Fundraiser. There's going to be all sorts of activities, and 15% of all the shopping you do that day will go directly to LA Dyke Day. In New York City on April 5th, OMG Spot with Sloan. So let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Kitty Stryker.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit pleasurechest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Kitty Stryker, and we're talking all about consent. And I'm reminding you that if you call in tonight, or if you call in to our 24-hour voicemail, you can win an amazing wood butt plug from Knob Essence, the Romp, which is generously donated by Nightcap Megastore Staten Island, nightcapmegastore.com. Thank you, Jackie. You can call us live, 866-472-5788, or you can call our voicemail, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. Okay, so before the break, we took a little detour, although consent is still important, to this new show, Harlots, and I can't wait to get your take on it. Here's my one little nugget that I took away, and I've only seen the first episode, and you've seen the first four, is just that I feel like Hollywood and mainstream media continue to be sort of titillated / terrified of depicting sex work in any context, right, that feel like meaningful. So it's interesting that once you sort of dress it up and make it a period piece, then you can explore all these issues that a show about sex work can explore, which are fascinating, but you've got to do it under the guise of like nostalgia / history fetishization / this isn't really happening now, everyone. It sort of distances them from the core thing, which is sex work. But I want to hear your take on it.
Yeah. So, I would say I have been really loving it. I think that part of the reason why it's not terrible is because I think it's done in conjunction with, I want to say ITV, but I could be wrong about that. I know that there is a British channel that is doing this with Hulu. Mm. And I am certain that that is helping, because the sex work depictions I've seen come from the UK are so much better most of the time. It's not a complete guarantee, but like they also did the Crimson Petal and the White, which is a really interesting rise from poverty into the upper classes for a particular sex worker. And they managed to balance both the power that she feels from being a sex worker, and also the lack of power she feels in that she feels that it's kind of her only option. And I think that that is something that we still struggle to do for sex workers today, to give them both agency while also acknowledging the limitations of that agency.
Right. And in the case of Harlots, there's this whole family. It's like a family and a workplace drama, because there's a whole family involved in the business, in the industry, in this particular town. And so that also like brings up all of these issues, because essentially the original person who got you into sex work is your mother in this case.
Yeah. Which was very common. Whether it was that your mother brought you up to be a sex worker or your mother sold you to be a sex worker. I mean, both of those things happened fairly frequently in an era where you didn't really have birth control, so you probably had more children than you could afford. Also, it's important to keep in mind, though it's kind of sad to think about, that at the time there was a belief that having sex with a child would actually cure your venereal disease. And in an era where syphilis would mutilate your face, drive you insane, and then kill you, caused a lot of demand for child sex work.
And then they would just spread more syphilis.
Yep. Because that does not cure syphilis.
Right.
So, yeah.
So do you think the show has promise in terms of its depictions of sex work?
I think that I would say, yes, it has promise. I appreciate that there are some interesting parallels between sex work and other types of workers that you see a little bit later in the show. you see that sex work offers more mobility for women than other types of labor, and that that is one of the reasons why women are drawn to it, which I appreciate, because I believe that to be true even now. I think that there's, I'm a little confused at how resentful all of the, I mean, I kind of understand the mother's resentment of being brought into sex work, because she was brought in at an early age. She was brought in at 10. She was basically sold by her mother. So I get that, but I don't fully understand Charlotte or Lucy's, like, hesitance, considering they would have been brought up around it. They would have seen sex workers in a very humanizing way.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have been like, well, I want to have money, so therefore, of course, I'm going to take on my mother's business. In fact, for someone like either Charlotte or Lucy, they might be able to inherit their mother's business as a madam.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be very inclined to stay in that industry.
Yeah, that's going to, I'm really curious to see sort of how that all plays out. I think they're deliberately trying to have a kind of reluctant person for the quote audience to identify with.
Yeah, I definitely
think that's the technique there.
I definitely think that's true. And I mean, honestly, I identified a lot with Lucy in a way that's kind of surprised me, and that she can see the financial practicality of being a sex worker, and she kind of insists on it, but she also feels uncomfortable with the with how it plays out. Mm-hmm. In a way that I think speaks a lot, especially to my early experiences with sex work, where it was much more of a survival thing for me. So I kind of appreciate, as a sex worker, that they depict that. But I also don't get the impression, and I don't want to give any spoilers, but like, I get the impression that she, her discomfort is not so much with the work as it is the, some of the men that she encounters in her work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And I think that that's perfectly fair.
No, there's a ton about class. I mean, I think it's really a really fascinating look at class, because there's all these stratifications, even within certain classes. And it's quite a commentary on class and entitlement. Absolutely. And privilege.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is a sense of, like, when the brothel, as the brothel is planning to move to a more expensive area, it's interesting how there is both a desire to retain clients, but also a desire to leave some clients behind if they don't fit the current class standing. If they, there's like a back and forth about reputation, where not, mm-hmm, only the sex workers have to dress nicer and attract a better clientele, but the clients have to be up to standard, which is right. Very interesting.
Okay, so let's transition out of Harlots. You know, I think that when we have talked about consent on the show, often it's in the context of talking about BDSM, which, mm-hmm, is a topic that I cover often. And I think that, you know, BDSM has this reputation as having at its foundation consent. Safe, sane, and consensual was one of the first things that was coined by gay male SM activists in New York.
Yep.
And yet there are issues around consent and consent violation within BDSM communities. And they have been not that well handled. In my experience, both on the ground and also just on the internet, people are really divided. And in some ways, I think of kinky people as more progressive, but their responses to accounts of consent violations seem to be in line with just our general public.
Yeah. Which isn't terribly surprising, because it is a section of the general public who is involved in these things. I think that the issue that I bump up against a lot with consent and BDSM is that when people think that they're experts on something, it is very hard to educate them. And it is very hard to get through and complicate their ideas of not only their understanding of what consent is, but their understanding of who they are. And I think that a lot of the resistance to conversations about consent are because it is very difficult to acknowledge that we may have violated someone's consent. We may, in fact, we probably have. And that is something that we are taught only bad people do, which is a problem, which is why when we try to get accountability from people, there's a lot of resistance, there's a lot of backlash, because in order to acknowledge that you violated consent, there's this understanding that like, oh, well, then you must be a bad person and you will be banished from the community. Despite the fact that that's not what happens. Almost always the person who brings up the consent violation is the one who gets banished. There's still that sense. You see that in you know, popular media as well. This belief that, oh, if you accuse a famous man of being a rapist, he won't have any followers anymore. Like, he will sink into obscurity. And that has never happened.
Right, as judging by the people in the White House.
Exactly. Who just declared it Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So there's this complete cognitive dissonance between what actually happens and what people are afraid of happening. And I think that until we address that and make it not scary to say, yes, I violated consent, and here is what I am going to do about it to rectify the situation, not only for myself, in educating myself, but also to help this person that I've hurt and the community at large.
Yeah. I mean, I saw you at there's a consent summit last fall in Seattle that was put on by the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. And I said this very thing at my keynote, that I think like everyone needs to stand up in a room full of people and say, I have violated someone's consent, especially people who are leaders. Because I feel like if we can't own that people make mistakes and that people misread situations, misunderstand things, or something just goes in a direction that you're not expecting. If you can't cop to that, then there will always be this kind of line where there's like the people who are really good leather people and then the people who are predators. And there's like this really strong distinction, in the same way that there are with people who sexually assault people, right? There's like bad people jumping out of alleys, and then there's like your friends you went to a party with.
Yeah, that is absolutely what happens. I think that being willing to stand up and say like, yes, this is something that I've done, and here is how I have been working to try to make sure that I don't do that again, is really important. People don't have a model for that.
Okay, we're going to take another commercial break. When we come back, we are going to dig more into the consent question and talk about just what consent culture is and could look like with Kitty Stryker. So don't go anywhere.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We're talking today with writer and activist Kitty Stryker. So, Kitty, answer this central question. What is consent culture? What does a consent culture look like?
Well, I wish I had a succinct answer. I would say that for me personally, consent culture comes from a place of understanding that there is no ability to get 100% consent from people under white supremacist capitalist patriarchy. That there are always forces at work that coerce you consciously and subconsciously into giving consent. And once you come to a place where you understand that consent can never be 100%, you begin to really think about how can you get as close to 100% as you possibly can while still giving space to be wrong. And for me, that interplay is what consent culture is about. Is about leaving space for people to fuck up while also creating dialogue about accountability within communities where someone is repeatedly fucking up, and listening to survivors and their experiences and taking them seriously and being able to hopefully manage all of those potentially very disparate feelings at the same time.
So you talked about fucking up, and I'm wondering, sex educator Charlie Glickman wrote this piece online about consent mistakes versus consent violations, and I'm wondering what you think about that. Is there a difference?
I think that intent isn't magic, and I think that the people who tend to say, well, there's mistakes and there's violations, are people who are still shirking from the idea that they have violated someone's consent. And a violation, to me, again, like, this is all like my personal theories on these things. To me, a violation of consent does not mean that you did it on purpose. It means that you did it at all. Mm-hmm. Whether it was on purpose or not is irrelevant. The harm has been done. So, you know, and also I think when you try to say, well, this was an accident, well, this was on purpose, you're trying to place fault, and that will almost never acknowledge the fact that some of the fault will be with society and the ways that we're taught to violate each other's consent or to ignore each other's lack of consent in order to get what we want. We're taught that all the time. I would argue that bootstrapping and meritocracy often relies on a lack of consent and being willing to put that aside in order to gain power or financial stability.
And so you think the intent doesn't necessarily matter. Like, I didn't mean to step on your foot, but I did step on your foot.
Right. I mean, I guess my hesitation around that sort of differentiation is that I feel that that puts a lot of labor on at the feet of survivors of these experiences to change the way that they feel. I mean, I guess I almost guarantee that that sort of conversation is going to happen to tell a victim, well, you shouldn't be so upset about this because it was an accident. Like, I just feel like that's going to happen. I know it has happened already, and I don't think that that's good enough. I think that it's okay to say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. How can I help you feel better right now? What can I do? Here's what I'm going to do to educate myself. You know, here are some various actions I can take. We can have a mediation process or not, whatever makes you feel comfortable. That ownership process should be the same regardless. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I guess I worry that if we create a different space or a different understanding for mistakes, and I put that in quotations, then everyone's going to say, oh, well, it was a mistake. Like, I mean, what's the protection against that? Of course people right. are going to say they didn't do it on purpose.
Right. So you're saying it minimizes it, and then it also kind of discounts the accountability, which is a really big piece of this.
That's kind of my concern.
And you talked about mediation. I mean, part of the issue here also is that we don't really have a formal, or even in this case, an informal way to deal with these situations within BDSM communities, right? There's no, it's not like we have our own, you know, justice system that's like operating in BDSM communities. And certainly I think outside of BDSM communities, everyone knows what it's like to interact with the justice system, which is not great for assault survivors. So, right. So it's a wonder that they don't go to them. So what do you have a kind of vision or proposal for how this could go differently when someone reports to an event organizer or someone who runs a dungeon or whomever that they experienced a consent violation?
Well, I would say, since I'm often asked to weigh in and sort of create judgment on these situations, which I'm super uncomfortable with, by the way, my general feeling is calling people out or calling people in is something that you do when you care about the person learning from the call out. Now, I see call out culture, which is the sort of putting people on blast on Twitter or Tumblr or, you know, other social media, is often said to be used as a call out, but it begins to become bullying when it no longer cares about the education of the person involved and cares about just repeatedly punishing them. I mostly see that happen to marginalized people, and that might be why I feel very strongly about it. I usually see that kind of behavior happen with trans women in particular, who can lose community very quickly. And I think that that's really important to put out there, especially since today is, you know, Trans Day of Visibility. That kind of isolation tactic can really negatively impact somebody's mental health, especially mm-hmm. when they're marginalized and have a hard time with community in the first place.
And so what do we do about social media? Because I know that I've seen some ugly things play out in social media, and I thought to myself, wow, why can't these two people or more be in a room right now having this conversation? But people feel really strongly that, like, if someone is a leader or someone is a prominent member of a BDSM community, then they need to sort of be publicly called out.
I hope that I continue to be publicly called out as a leader, frankly, because I think that it helps people feel that they have the security of other people being willing to go to bat for them, and stand up and say, yeah, this is a thing that happens, which I think is really important. I think that being a leader, you have to expect that you are going to be held accountable on a much larger scale and a much more constant scale. That's part of the responsibility of being a leader. If you don't like that, you shouldn't be a leader. So I'm not against that. Now, what I think happens, and my response when I get called out is, okay, well, what would you like to see happen? Because I'm happy to help facilitate a response to that and give ideas. But I also really want to encourage other people to feel like they have agency in being part of that solution and feeling like their concerns have been heard. So for me, a public sphere is great because it's like crowdsourcing ideas on what to do. So I like it, but it can definitely get toxic very quickly. And that's why I tend to look at call-outs like, is this to help educate somebody or to get them to say, oh, you're right, I'm sorry, which can be a very important thing. Or is this just to repeatedly punish them and prevent them from having community or moving forward in their lives after they have already done the acknowledgement and have already done the work?
Right, because as we all know, your entire reputation could be eviscerated on Twitter in a matter of, I don't know, an hour?
Absolutely.
If something really catches fire. And I've certainly been witness to situations, very public situations, where I've somehow known part of the private backstory and thought, oh, this entire element of the backstory, no one knows.
Right.
And so then I'm constantly questioning, okay, what did happen? What's going on? What do we do? Like, where do I fall on this? Okay, we've got to take another commercial break. So stay with us, everyone. More on consent with Kitty Stryker when we get back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, The Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We're talking about consent culture with Kitty Stryker, and we're also giving away an amazing romp butt plug, which has been given to us by the fabulous folks at Nightcap Megastore in Staten Island, New York. Check out nightcapmegastore.com. Night is spelled N-I-T-E. And okay, so we talked about this sort of call-out culture. And like I said, like, people can have their reputation sort of ruined on social media, right? What, I mean, how does one accept criticism gracefully? And what if you think someone is just totally spreading like sort of lies and rumors about you?
I mean, it's definitely happened to me and I'm still here. So like, I don't think it's not the end of the world. I try to remember that even when someone is giving me feedback that sounds really harsh or even cruel to me, there's usually a nugget of truth in there. And sometimes it takes more work than others to look at that nugget and to figure out where it is. But it's worth it for that reflection and to say, oh, is that something that I'm doing? Huh, let me spend some time thinking about that. And I've generally found that, for me at least, like acknowledging that there may be some truth in whatever feedback I'm getting, and that's something I'm going to sit back and reflect on and something I'm going to educate myself more on, has been very helpful in both helping other people feel like they're being heard, but also it kind of takes some of the sting away if someone's just trying to make you feel bad about yourself. If they're just trying to punish you or to hurt you in some way, if you're like, huh, wow, okay, like that's definitely something I'm going to think about and I'm going to reflect on, then that doesn't have any power to hurt you. More data is always better, in my opinion. And it comes in a lot of different ways, but it's always useful.
So you're working on this anthology project called Ask, Building a Consent Culture. Will you tell me about some of the people who are writing for it and some of the themes and topics that people are exploring?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. This has been a project that I have been wanting to do for about 2 years, and Thorntree picked it up for me, which I'm super happy about. About half the book is voices of people of color, most of whom are Black, which was really important to me because they don't often get to have a voice in conversations about rape culture published by white feminist media. And about half of the people are trans or gender nonconforming, which was also very important to me for similar reasons. So it's a really eclectic collection. And we go through not just consent culture in the bedroom, but we also talk about it in jails. We talk about it in schools. We talk about it in like household, interpersonal relationships, the community at large. There's a great piece by Kate Fractal about consent culture and LARPing, a live action role play. That's really great. There's a piece by Virgie Tovar that is about consent culture and being fat within the medical industry and experiencing when your consent is ignored in that realm. And there's also Roz Kaveny, British writer. She writes a really great piece about consent culture and laws around passing the trans experience of whether or not you are assumed to be the gender that you identify as. And it's really interesting. Like, one of the things that I told all of my writers for this book was that I didn't want to tell them what to write about. I wanted them to write a personal story or like some sort, something that felt personal, what that said about society at large, and what is a possible solution to that issue or that tension. Not the solution, but just a solution. Because I think that when we talk about rape culture, we talk about consent culture, we want a succinct, singular solution. That is impossible. There has to be a lot of different solutions and a lot of different things that we try because different situations will require different responses.
And it sounds like you're going to cover this from a lot of different angles. Like you said, I feel like we see kind of every day that consent violations are happening, and they're not just in these like sort of sexual, romantic, erotic contexts, right? They're happening kind of in our everyday lives. And then they extend into the bedroom, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I think that we focus a lot on the bedroom as like, oh, this is the thing that happens. But I think it's really important to recognize all the other various ways that consent can be violated. There's an author who writes about consent culture as it relates to being pregnant and Black, and how when she was going into labor, her consent was repeatedly violated by the white hospital she was in because as a Black woman, she wasn't believed to know what she needed for her own body. That's a piece by Tekiala Rivera, which I'm really excited to show people.
I totally follow her on Instagram. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I'm so excited to have her on board.
Do you think that we are making progress? It feels like this is the conversation. This is one of many conversations that are happening right now that are happening urgently on college campuses where both you and I speak to a lot of college students. Do you feel like we're making headway here?
I think we are. I think that, and maybe, I mean, you know, I'm a little bit limited, but even just exploring my experiences with like Tinder dating, for example, an area that's not really known for consent conversations. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had really great experiences being very clear and having, you know, casual sex partners be very upfront about what they're looking for and what they're comfortable with and what they're not comfortable with, which suggests to me that this is stuff that is coming out into the general sort of environment. Like, people are starting to pick up these things, which I think is a big plus. I think that what's happening, what we're seeing now, is there's some big explosions of things like, for example, the president being a sexual assaulter and people like writing a million think pieces about that. Those things are getting blown up, which makes it look like it's getting worse. But actually, we're talking about it now, which makes it better.
And what do you think is the number one thing that people want to hear about consent when you do speak on college campuses?
I mean, I think that, well, the number one thing that people want to hear, or the number one thing that people need to hear.
Okay, let's go with need to hear.
I think the number one thing that I try to address every time I go and speak in public about consent is, this is how you respond to being accused. Like, I think that the more we can make people feel safe saying that they feel their consent was violated, and the more we can help people feel safe saying, oh, I fucked up and I'm really sorry, the better it's going to be for everybody. Like, that is just like the bottom floor thing that we need to do. And we can't trust the justice system to actually provide any sort of justice. So we need to figure this shit out by ourselves. We're on our own.
And it's a leap, I think, especially for folks that young, to get comfortable with that kind of reflection or get comfortable with that level of discomfort, especially when it's hurled at you in public, right?
Yeah, I think that that's true. But I actually feel, I could be wrong. This could be my experience with social media. But I feel that with things like social media that really rewards people for that kind of introspection and navel-gazing behavior, I think that we're seeing people do that more naturally and earlier than we have before. And I think that that might be part of why trans kids are more comfortable coming out as being trans, and younger people are coming out as being queer. It's not just because the environment feels safer, but also they get more acceptance in having these thoughts and thinking about where they're at.
That's a really great point, and a great point to make on a Trans Day of Visibility. So thanks so much for being here, Kitty Stryker. I wish you luck on this project.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Kitty's the editor of Ask, Building a Consent Culture, which will be published by Thorntree Press in the fall. You can find out more at kittystryker.com. Follow them on Facebook and Twitter at Kitty Stryker. We are still giving away the Romp Amazing Wood Butt Plug from Knob Essence, which we're getting from Nightcap Megastore in Staten Island. Thank you so much, Jackie. So you've got a few days here to call and leave us an incredibly thoughtful question or comment about this show on our voicemail, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266, and you can win a Romp. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guests will be Carlton Mackey and Devin DeMarcus, the creators of the Instagram project, hashtag Black Men Smile. I met these two at Sex Down South, and they're doing incredible projects, only one of which is Black Men Smile. So I can't wait to talk to both of them. Until then, you can get me on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. You can see the show and the live tweets on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And in the meantime, take some time to talk about sex and consent out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.